Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the NATO Summit. Notable authors together optimize. You're listening to Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio, the world's largest social network, reaching listeners not only locally, but nationally and internationally. Discover what the world has to say by logging on to blogtalkradio.com/Kathy Watson, CathiWatson. The world is shrinking. Imagine, by click of a button, you could circle the world with your message. I'm convinced that there are really no accidents. And recently I received a copy of The Greatest Salesman in the World from my library. I don't recall asking for it, but there it was in my hands. What I do is reserve books, and once they're available to me, the library will call and say, "Kathy, your books are here." And we get in the car, go to the drive-thru, and pick it up. And I had about 4 books, and I wondered, what is this little book doing here? Oh, it was weather-beaten. But sidebar, let me fast forward a little bit. I was so enthralled with a book that I ordered several of them and gave them away as gifts. The best-selling author, he wrote The Return of the Rag Picker, O.G. Mandino, M-A-N-D-I-N-O. I know that you're accustomed to me spotlighting and highlighting the celebrity authors from choices, awe-inspiring choices revealed by successful entrepreneurs, and I introduce them to you. And they're celebrities in their own right. Get the book. Choices is available at AuthorHouse.com, Amazon.com, and Barnes and Noble. But let me get back to this book. Oh, it just kind of sat around in my studio, and I kept looking at it, and I thought, well, I may as well pick it up and see what it's all about. Over 2 million copies in print. Every day, thousands are discovering the greatest salesman in the world, and you could be one. What you are today is not important. For in this runaway bestseller, you will learn how to change your life by applying the secrets you're about to discover in the ancient scrolls. It's in paperback. I have to admit. Oh, by the way, I did call the library. And I asked them how it got in with the books that I wanted. And they didn't even know. I have to admit, I was a bit skeptical. But once I began to read the book, I was inspired. I couldn't put it down. There are, I'll tell you in just one little minute. It doesn't give you the pages. 110, 12, now available. 112 pages, 13, 14, 15. It's original and ingenious. You can change your life with the priceless wisdom of the 10 ancient scrolls handed down for thousands of years. Get the book, open it up. I will persist until I succeed. I was not delivered into this world into defeat. Nor does failure course in my veins. I'm not a sheep waiting to be prodded by my shepherd. I'm a lion, and I refuse to talk, to walk, to sleep with the sheep. The slaughterhouse of failure is not my destiny. I will persist until I succeed. From the ancient scroll, marked 3, in The Greatest Salesman in the World. How many of you stop 3 inches from gold? In Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, get the book. And when you're reading these books, I want you to forget about all the monkey chatter, all the chicken chatter that's going on in your brain. You are to live your life according to your gospel. When you woke up this morning, the first hour was the rudder of the day, and you woke up to a blank canvas. You get to be the Michelangelo. What are your choices? It all boils down to choices. And you know, I want... Oh, let me just sidebar. This book is respectfully dedicated to a great salesman, W. Clement Stone, who has blended love, compassion, and a unique system of salesmanship into a living philosophy for success which motivates and guides countless thousands of individuals each year to discover greater happiness, good mental and physical health, peace of mind, power, and wealth. It was Clement Stone who said, "Every day in every way, I'm getting better and better." Or was it someone else? Why does Clement Stone pop up? "Every day in every way, I'm getting better and better." That covers it all. And you say it all day long. "Every day in every way, I'm getting better and better." Norman Vincent Peale said, "The greatest salesman in the world is one of the most inspiring, uplifting, and motivating books I have ever read. I can well understand why it has had such a splendid acceptance." And here is from the manager, U.S. Training, Park Davis and Company, "At Last. A book on sales and salesmanship that can be read and enjoyed by veteran and recruits alike. I have just completed The Greatest Salesman in the World for the second time. It was just too good for just one reading, in all sincerity. I say that it is the most readable, most constructive, most useful instrument for teaching of sales as a profession that I have ever read." And Paul Meyer, president of Success Motivation Institute. I mean, these are his compadre that stand by side by side. They're all professionals and very successful in their field of selling. And Paul Meyer said, "I have read almost every book that has ever been written on salesmanship, and I think O.G. Mandino has captured all of them in The Greatest Salesman in the World. No one who follows these principles will ever fail as a salesman, and no one will ever be truly great without them. But the author has done more than present the principles. He has woven them into the fabric of one of the most fascinating stories I have ever read." And the former dean of Dale Carnegie Institute of Effective Speaking and Human Relations, Lester J. Bradshaw Jr., said, "Every sales manager should read The Great Salesman, The Greatest Salesman in the World. It's a book to keep at your bedside or on your living room table, a book to deep into as needed, to browse in now and then, to enjoy in small, stimulating portions. It's a book for the hour, for the years, a book to turn over and over again as to a friend, a book of moral, spiritual, and ethical guidance, an unfailing source of comfort and inspiration." I could go on and on. And Clement Stone said, I like the story, I like the style. I like the book. Every salesman and members of his family should read it. And it starts out, chapter one. Hadfield lingered before the bronze mirror and studies his reflected image in the polished metal. Oh, only the eyes have retained their youth, he murmured as he turned away and moved slowly across the spacious marble floor. He passed between black onyx columns, rising to support ceilings burnished with silver and gold. And his aging legs carried him past tables carved from cypress and ivory. Tortoiseshell gleamed from couches and divans and walls inlaid with gems, shimmered with brocades of the most painstaking design. Huge palms grew placidly in bronze vessels, framing a fountain of alabaster nymphs, while flower boxes encrusted with gems competed with their contents for attention. No visitor to Hafid's palace could doubt that he was indeed a person of great wealth. The old man passed through an enclosed garden and entered his warehouse, which extended beyond the mansion for 500 paces. Iramus, his chief bookkeeper, waited uncertainly just beyond the entryway. Greetings, sire. Hafid nodded and continued on in silence. Iramus followed, his face unable to disguise concern at the master's unusual request for a meeting in this place. Near the loading platforms, Hafid paused to watch goods being removed from baggage wagons and counted into separate stalls. Oh, there were wools, fine linens, parchment, honey, carpets, and oil from Asia Minor, glass, figs, nugs, balsams from his own country, textiles and drugs, ginger, cinnamon, and precious stones from Arabia. Corn, paper, granite, alabaster, and basalt from Egypt. Tapestries from Babylon. Paintings from Rome and statues from Greece. The smell of balsam was heavy in the air, and Hafid's sensitive nose detected the presence of sweet plums, apples, cheese, and ginger. Finally, he turned to Amaras, old friend. How much wealth is there now accumulated in our treasury? Amaras paled. Everything, master. Everything, master? He asked. Everything. Well, I have not studied the numbers recently, but I would imagine the estimate that there would be an excess of 7 million gold talents. And were all the goods in all my warehouses and emporiums converted into gold, how much would they bring? Our inventory is not yet complete for this season, sire, but I would calculate a minimum of another 3 million talents. Hafid nodded. Purchase no more goods. Institute immediately whatever plans are required to sell everything that is mine and convert all of it into gold. Well, the bookkeeper's mouth opened, but no sound came forth. He fell back as if struck, and finally he could speak. The words came with effort. Sire, I don't understand. This has been our most profitable year. Every emporium reports an increase in sales over the previous season. Even the Roman legions are now our customers, for did you not sell the procurator in Jerusalem 200 Arabian stallions within the fourth of night? Forgive my boldness, for seldom have I questioned your orders. But this command I cannot comprehend. Hafid smiled and gently grasped Emirus' hand. My trusted comrade, is your memory of sufficient strength to recall the first command you received from me when you entered my employ many years ago? Emirus frowned momentarily, and then his face brightened. I was enjoined by you to remove, each year, half the profit from our treasury and dispense it to the poor. And did you not at that time consider me a foolish man of business? Well, I had great forebodings, sire. Hafid nodded and spread his arms toward the loading platforms. Now, Emirus, will you now admit that your concern was without ground? Yes, sire. Then let me encourage you to maintain faith in this decision until I explain my plans. I'm now an old man, and my needs are simple. Since my beloved Lisha has been taken from me after so many years of happiness, it is my desire to distribute all my wealth among the poor of this city. I shall keep only enough to complete my life without discomfort. Besides disposing of our inventory, I wish you to prepare the necessary documents which will transfer the ownership of every emporium to him who now manages each for me. I also wish you to distribute 5,000 gold talents to these managers as a reward for their years of loyalty, and so that they may restock their shelves in any manner that they desire. Emirus began to speak, but Hafid's raised hand silenced him. Does this assignment seem unpleasant to you? Well, the bookkeeper kind of shook his head and attempted to smile. No, sire. It is... Oh, I just don't understand your reasoning. Your words are those of a man whose days are numbered. Oh, it is your character, Emirus, that your concern should be for me instead of yourself. Have ye no thoughts for your own future when our trade empire is disbanded? Oh, we've been comrades together for so many years. How can I now think only of myself? Hafid embraced his old friend and replied, it is not necessary. I ask that you immediately transfer 50,000 gold talents to your name, and that I beg that you remain with me until a promise I made long ago is fulfilled. When that promise is kept, I will then bequeath this palace and warehouse for you, and I will then be ready to rejoin. Bequeath this palace and warehouse to you, for I, dear person, will be ready to rejoin Lisha. The old bookkeeper stared at his master, unable to comprehend the words he heard. 50,000 gold talents, the palace, the warehouse. I am not deserving. Hafid nodded. I have always counted your friendship as my greatest asset. What I now bestow on you is of little measure compared to your unending loyalty. You have mastered the art of living not only for yourself alone, but for others, and This concern has stamped thee above all as a man among men. Now I urge you to hasten with the consummation of my plans. Time is the most precious commodity I possessed, and the hourglass of my life is nearly filled. Oh, the bookkeeper turned his face to hide his tears. His voice broke as he asked, And what of your promise yet to keep? Although we have been as brothers, never have I heard you talk of such a matter. Hafield folded his arms and smiled. I will meet with you again when you have discharged my commands of this morning. Then, dear person, I will disclose a secret which I have shared with no one except my beloved wife for over 30 years. Listening to NATO Summit, Notable Authors Together Optimize. And the featured book today is The Greatest Salesman in the World by O.G. Mandino. Chapter 2. So it came to pass that a heavily guarded caravan soon departed from Damascus, carrying certificates of ownership in gold for those who managed each of Hafield's trade emporiums. Each of the 10 managers received word of Hafield's retirement and gift in stunned silence. Eventually, after making its last stop at the emporium, the caravan's mission was complete. The most powerful trade empire of its time was no more. His heart heavy with sadness, Emerus sent word to his master that the warehouse was now empty and the emporiums no longer bore the banner of Hafid. The messenger returned with the request that Emerus meet with his master by the fountain in the peristyle immediately. Hafield studied his friend's face and asked, "Is it done?" And the bookkeeper said, "Yes, it is done." "Grieve not, kind friend, and follow me." Only the sound of their sandals echoed in the giant chamber as Hafield led Emerus toward the marble stairway at the rear. His steps momentarily slowed as he neared a solitary vase on a tall stand of citrus wood, and he watched as the sunlight changed the glass from white to purple. Oh, his old face smiled. Then the two old friends began to climb the inner steps that led to the room inside the palace dome. There was an armed guard always present at the foot of the stairs. No longer was there. Finally, they reached a landing and paused, since both were without breath from the exertion of the climb, and they continued on to the second landing. And Hafid removed a small key from his belt. He unlocked the heavy oak door and leaned against it until it creaked inwards. The bookkeeper hesitated until his master beckoned him inside, and then he stepped timidly into the room to which no one has been allowed admission for over 3 decades. Gray and dusty light seeped down from the turrets above, and the bookkeeper gripped Hafid's arm until his eyes became accustomed to the semi-darkness with a faint smile. Hafid watched as Emerus turned slowly in a room that was bare except for a small cedar chest, spotlighted in a shaft of sunlight in one corner. "Are you not disappointed, Emerus? I know not what to say, sire. Are you not disappointed in the furnishings? Certainly the contents of this room have been a conversation piece among many. Have you not wondered or concerned yourself with the mystery of what is contained here, which I have guarded so zealously for so long? 3 decades. The bookkeeper nodded. It is true. There has been much talk and many rumors through the years as to what our master kept hidden here in the tower. Oh, yes, my friend. And most of them I've heard. Ah, it's been said that barrels of diamonds were here, gold ingots, or wild animals, or rare birds. Once a Persian rug merchant hinted that perhaps I maintained a small harem here. Leisha laughed at the thought of me with a collection of concubines. But as you can observe, there's nothing here except a small chest. Now come forward. The two men crouched beside the chest, and Huffield carefully proceeded to unroll the leather strapping which encircled it. He inhaled deeply of the cedar fragrance from the wood, and finally he pushed against the cover and it quietly sprung open. The bookkeeper leaned forward and stared over Hafield's shoulder at the trunk's contents. He looked at Hafield and shook his head in bewilderment. There was nothing inside the trunk but scrolls. Leather scrolls. Hafield reached inside and gently removed one of the scrolls. Momentarily, he clasped it to his breast and closed his eyes. A quiet calmness settled over his face, brushing away the lines of age. Then he rose to his feet and pointed toward the chest. Were this room filled to its beams with diamonds? Its value could not surpass what your eyes behold in this simple wooden box. All the success, happiness, love, peace of mind, and wealth that I have enjoyed is directly traceable to what is contained in these few scrolls. My debt to them and to the wise one who entrusted them to my care can never be repaid. Frightened by the tone in Hafid's voice, Emira stepped back and asked, "Is this the secret to which you have referred? Is this chest connected in some way with the promise you have yet to keep?" "Oh, the answer is yes to both of your questions." Emira passed his hand across his perspiring forehead, looked at Hafield with disbelief. "What is written on these scrolls that places their value beyond that of diamonds?" "All but one of these scrolls contain a principle, a law, or a fundamental truth written in a unique style to help the reader understand its meaning. To become a master in the art of sales, one must learn and practice the secret of each scroll. When one masters these principles, one has the power to accumulate all the wealth he desires." Emira stared at the old scrolls with dismay. "As wealthy even as you, farther wealthier if he chooses. You have stated that all but one of these scrolls contain selling principles. What is contained on the last scroll?" "The last scroll, as you call it, is the first scroll, which must be read, since each is numbered to be read in special sequence. And the first scroll contains a secret that has been given to a mere handful of wise men throughout history. Until next Thursday, get the book, The Greatest Salesman in the World. Au revoir.